Welcome to the Screen Tone Club January bonus episode. My name is Elliot Page and I'm joined by Mr. Andy Hanley. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing well. I mean, rather alarmed that January seems to have disappeared, and I want to know what alien race has abducted it, but apart from that, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, in my case, I'd like to talk to the alien races about abducting the entire rest of the year as well, just to get it over and done with, frankly.
Take us all now, please.
Yeah. The only thing I know about this month is I blinked and then it was over and I have a new jumper. That's kind of the one thing of note that has survived the month is I have a new jumper. So there we are. Cool. But no, this is your bonus episode for the podcast for all our Patreon backers. Thank you ever so much, everyone who has signed up to the Patreon. You'll have noticed that we have put up a pair of posts, actually, on the Patreon, which I think emails you. It's slightly opaque, sorry, about how we spent your money, the money you very kindly bequeathed to us, and we spent it mostly on hosting, frankly. You can find full details in our post-mortem page, which will explain that. And also we've got our plans for the coming year, which is already a 12 gone, so I feel like we're already slipping behind. But no pressure. But, you know, things you want to do, mostly it involves, if there's more of you, that'd be great, because then we can do more cool stuff. One thing we're going to look at doing is adjusting the like Patreon goal things, which basically means we're going to look at doing more bonus episodes for you lovely people who, you know, give us the money. But so sticking to the here and now, we are recording on the 27th of January for release on the 29th of January. So I have a day to like skive off of doing the editing until I realize I need to do it. And we are looking at the first outright winner of the poll, which was Sotaro Noda's Golden Kamuy. Not Kamuy as in K-A-M-U-I, because I kept typing that when trying to find it to buy a copy, and I wondered why I couldn't find it. So, whoops, I'm an idiot. But no, this is published by Viz. It's currently ongoing. It's got 7 volumes released in English, and it's up to 16 apparently in Japan, according to manga updates. You can buy it from all good physical and digital bookstores. There was an anime semi-recently, late last year. I didn't watch it. One thing I'd warn you about right off the jump is if you haven't read this, or you're like us and you've only read one volume for this here podcast, don't look at Wikipedia page. It's full of spoilers from like the second sentence. So be careful, because I've just had much later events spoiled for me. Thanks, Wikipedia. But I'm not going to repeat them here because that would just be mean. So Golden Kamuy, winner of our poll. And Andy, do you want to get started maybe? What you thought about this?
Yeah, sure.
I believe you watched the anime, didn't you?
I have. Yes, I've watched both seasons of the anime, so I'm kind of like... it's your typical kind of spitcore thing of, you know, 13 eps. They went away for a bit, you know, regathered themselves after all those exertions and then came back for another 13. So it's okay. Kind of like your typical 26 episodes thus far. I kind of hope there'll be more of it, because I did end up enjoying it. So I could be that guy on Wikipedia and then like spout all the spoilers, but I will also not do that because, as mentioned, that would be mean.
Thank you.
So Golden Kamuy is basically set in the late Meiji era. It kind of kicks off with what is effectively a flashback to the Russo-Japanese War, which is where our protagonist, Sugimoto, or Immortal Sugimoto, as he is known, for kind of reasons that become clear pretty bluntly right from the off and throughout this first volume. And so he kind of fought in that war. We then sort of fast forward. The war has finished. Sugimoto is no longer kind of, you know, attached to the military. And he's just kind of like gambling around, like many people at the end of any kind of major conflict, like kind of trying to figure out what to do with his life. Like he has some things that he needs to do that he feels the need to do that are also kind of delved into in this first volume. It just so happens he's kind of basically panning for gold in this stream. And he gets talking to this drunk guy who weaves this kind of grand tale about how some guy basically squirreled away a huge amount of gold, got arrested, and then effectively used the prisoners around him in prison to create a huge map, effectively a treasure map of where this gold is buried, by actually like tattooing bits of this map onto prisoners. And Sugimoto, you know, he ain't got no money, and he needs it for his ends. And so after initially dismissing the kind of this whole story as kind of being a load of rubbish, he kind of quickly realizes that there might actually be some truth to this, and so kind of decides to start off finding these escaped prisoners who carry these parts of this map on their bodies, in the hope that he can be the person that retrieves all of this gold. And where things really kind of get interesting is that he very quickly, well, one, he runs into a bear, which is pretty interesting in itself, in inverted commas, and he also runs into a girl called Asirpa, who is a member of an Ainu tribe, which is basically kind of a Japanese people who effectively have more or less been wiped out at this point. Like, there are very few of them left in this day and age. And a lot of Japanese, as far as I understand, like, aren't even really aware of their existence, which is kind of one of the important things in a very literal sense about this manga, is that it is very well researched about Ainu culture and language. And it has really kind of brought this tribe, this people to light in a way that, you know, had been completely forgotten by sort of generations of Japanese people, because, you know, as many indigenous populations have been kind of across the world, you know, they have effectively been obliterated by other people with their own ends. But anyway, so basically the story kind of at this point, at this sort of formative point, is really introducing Sugimoto and Asirpa, bringing them together under this kind of shared goal of finding this gold, finding this treasure via these prisoners and the map that they hold, because they both have their own kind of interests in this whole story and in this whole kind of gold thing. And, you know, they meet a couple of other characters as this sort of first volume comes to a close, who sort of become major players later on. And yeah, that's kind of it for the basic plot. I mean, if I had to kind of give you an elevator pitch, I guess, for this series, I'd almost call it kind of a more mature and gruesome Full Metal Alchemist. Like, it has that very similar kind of cadence of it sets out a very simple premise that gives rise to a very grandiose adventure that, you know, brings the main characters into contact with a lot of varied and larger than life characters, a lot of kind of crazy situations that are sometimes but aren't always necessarily kind of related to the actual goal at hand. And it's kind of a really good excuse for just like a good old romp with lots of really interesting and kind of very, very kind of fascinating characters that yeah, are all kind of increasingly crazy in all kinds of ways. And so it is kind of like a weird sort of adult Full Metal Alchemist, if I were to sum it up in a sentence.
Yeah, I have a different sort of touch point that I kind of hit on while listening to you. Thanks for the introduction. That was actually really good, better than what I had scribbled down here. But I would say it's like the slightly more unhinged and historically pinned One Piece, where instead of it being Goldie Roger saying, "Oh, all my gold is on this one place, go find it, haha." This is, you know, rumors upon rumors about this mysterious hoard of gold that, you know, the reason why Sugimoto gets clued into it is because drunk dude told him, and then he gets direct evidence. And, you know, it's one of these things where the story and the backing and the sort of mythology about this mysterious gold hoard is like confirmed. It's, you know, it's not hypothetical. It is a real thing. But it's so kind of ridiculous and fantastical that it can't help but draw in people who are themselves kind of unhinged into its orbit. Like Sugimoto himself, like his kind of background is really quite down to earth, and he's just a slightly more interesting dude, and who managed to get himself discharged by punching a superior officer, which it turns out in turn of the century Japanese army weren't gonna fly. And as you mentioned, like post-war, there's not exactly a GI Bill going on in 1904 or whatever the hell, so he's just going to be bambling around. So yeah, it's kind of enjoyable in that regard, where like the situation all these people are in is daft, and so it of course attracts all these daft people. There's one thing that's really nice about it is the stakes are set out quite strongly at the start of, oh yeah, this isn't going to be a fun adventure and a fun romp to try and find something. This is life or death. Like if you get a whiff of this stupid story, you are basically putting a knife to your throat, which is kind of something that, you know, some people who come into contact with this story don't survive, which is what makes it interesting. And Isepa, and I'm really glad you pronounced her name, because man alive, I could not figure it out off the text, is a really fascinating character who, you know, she's underestimated for a multitude of reasons. She's Ainu, as mentioned, so she's indigenous people who are kind of already being brushed aside as Hokkaido is colonized. She's younger. I don't know her exact age. And she's also quite short. She's also female. And so everyone immediately underestimates her instantaneously, forgetting or not knowing the fact that she's basically been self-sufficient for probably most of her life and does not really care what you think. And she's kind of, it's kind of nice. Like, you see some of the parts that Golden Kamuy is more sort of posted about. Like, the main thing I knew about Golden Kamuy before this was Gold Horde, funny faces, and check out this man service. And you have some shades of that in this first volume, but it's a lot more resigned. Like, you know, the images that people post online are the exceptions, at least so far.
Yeah, it's kind of the interesting thing kind of about the cadence of that series as a whole, because again, kind of from what I've seen of the anime, it kind of starts out relatively restrained in most ways, and then as you get more and more of those kind of unhinged characters, it finds itself opening up in more ways where it can just do those goofy things, yet still kind of keep the main plates spinning and the main plot threads going. Like the early reckoning of it, and this was the experience I had with the anime, was that I was kind of lukewarm on it for a little while, and then as its cast kind of gets bolstered out and you see the relationships really start to cement, that's where I kind of warmed to it. Cause it's like, oh, I actually really like all these characters, like idiots though a lot of them are. Like, I've really warmed to them all. Mm-hmm. And I think actually one of the things that this first one of the manga does quite well actually is with the main two characters of Sugimoto and Isepa, like,
oh yeah,
maybe it's partly off the back of having watched the anime, but I was on board with them pretty early on, of just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, there's something kind of likable about these characters, because they're both very earnest and upfront about everything. They don't really kind of hold anything in reserve. They are both just open up, and they are themselves from kind of page one, effectively.
Yeah, I feel like the thing that really helps with that, with those two especially, with Sugimoto and Isepa, is that they both have very strong mutual respect, which is earned. Like, you know, initially Isepa's like, ugh, whatever, and what are you doing here, you weird foreigner? And Sugimoto's like, hey, I'm just doing my thing, don't worry about it. And they kind of gain each other's mutual respect, like Sugimoto by facing down the bear and being a moron by facing down a bear, and Isepa by poisoning said bear. And so it's, you know, there's this very strong bond of like, oh, we both bring something to the table here. And like, both of them already have some existing skin in the game. That's not a pun, although it kind of is.
I was going to say.
They both have some existing skin in the game when it comes to this hoard of gold. And towards the end of the volume, it kind of also lets you know, like, how much of a big, how much of a, like, an undertaking it is. There's a part with, Shiraishi, the escape king. God, I love him. Fucking moron. He feels like a very JoJo character to me, where he's a lovable moron, but he really is a moron. But yeah, equally, like, Sugimoto runs into this guy, he's got tattoo on him, kidnaps him. He tries to escape because he loves escaping, and that's his whole thing. There's a good note where Shiraishi, like, his criminal record is more escape attempt than actual original crime now. So if you'd have just knocked it off, you'd have been fine, mate. So what? But he's a moron. But then they kind of, again, you know, they both bond over, like, trying not to catch hypothermia and die. One thing that is nice, actually, is I really like all the nature in this. Like, Hokkaido is very much a cold tundra, like, sort of swept land, beautiful, and kind of harsh. And one thing comes across very clearly is, hey, if you don't keep your shit together, you're going to friggin' die out here in no time. Like, from the wildlife, from the cold, from not having anything to eat, from weird, crazy ex-army people. You know, all this stuff is going to murder the hell out of you. And so it's kind of nice that, like, you have that fear, that you have that feeling of, okay, we're in a strange land, we're on a strange journey. Also, there's a wolf here, and I've mentioned bears. But yeah, also one thing to mention on that note, which was my point I was meaning to get to, is it all looks really lovely. Like, all the animals look really great. And it doesn't really shy away from it. Like, for example, when they're skinning a squirrel and it's kind of intense, but at the same time you look at it and go, yeah, that's a really well drawn, ooh, gross.
I mean, I was going to say, like, for all the kind of wonder of nature, that there is also some very much kind of not for the squeamish moments throughout this volume. That again, like, I feel like the anime sort of dials back on all of that stuff. So there are a few panels I was like, oh man, okay, this is really going for it.
Well, it's kind of nice because it's very sort of matter of fact, especially when you, like I say, you've got an Ainu girl who, like, basically raised herself in the wilderness. And she's just like, yeah, here's the gallbladder of this bear. Eat it if you want. And she's like, like, one of the first sort of goony panels is when, like, Sugimoto's like, you're going to eat the brain of that squirrel? And Usurper's like, hey, you want it? Go on. And it's just this really funny, like, no one's happy in the situation. Like, Sugimoto has to eat a brain. He doesn't really want to, but it does taste nice. And Usurper's like, ah, yeah, gotcha. It's real stupid. Like, it's a real dumb. It's a very, like, Fast Friends type event. I don't know. Like, you can tell they already have, like, a rapport, but it's still ribbing each other constantly.
Yeah. I mean, I do find it kind of interesting, like, how. If you were to kind of tell somebody who had no kind of knowledge of this series at all, if you were to describe the two main characters and say, yeah, and their buddies, you'd be like, wait, what? That makes no sense. Like, how can you possibly write that to kind of gel at all? But, like, this series just pulls it off so effortlessly. I think partly because, like you say, it's a relationship built on mutual respect and kind of just, like, mutual usefulness to one another, because, like, totally, Usurper has a wealth of kind of local knowledge and cultural knowledge of sort of the area and how to survive, and Sugimoto is a really good kind of blunt force, effectively. Like, you know, he hasn't got the name Immortal Sugimoto for no reason, so he's a really good battering ram when just brute force is needed to do something.
Well, yeah, I think if anything, Sugimoto is like the immovable object rather than the unstoppable force. Like, he'll take a gut shot like a champ. He'll get a scar from it. Jesus, that panel. Yeah, Sugimoto is pretty cool though, just because he's like, hey, I ain't anyone special. I just don't let people kill me. And that's is kind of his sort of almost like Yakuza game series line that he slipped in there. But yeah, and like I say, like, all the art is really lovely. Like, it's one of these things where, like, when you first see Usurper and you think, man, her outfit is really intense. I wonder if they can keep that up. Oh, they do. And it's wonderfully drawn the whole way through. You can tell, like, there's a combination both of, like, the research and the bibliography at the end of the book is hilariously long. It's got a longer bibliography than many, like, frigging academic texts I've read recently.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of... It's interesting because, you know, we've had a few titles on this show where we've kind of talked about the research, things like A Bride Story, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. But just to see that literal kind of reference list, just kind of, you know, a full page of like, hey, these are all the texts I've delved into to get all this stuff right. And, you know, these are the people and the organizations that I spoke to make sure everything is represented properly. It's just like huge kudos for that, because it would have been so easy to do the lazy version of like, oh yeah, like, here are a few things that I read about on Wikipedia and, you know, they sound real cool. They'll be rad in my manga. Like, versus like, hey, no, I this is actually an important kind of cultural touchstone that is almost lost at this point. And it's important that this is represented correctly in terms of, you know, the language and the people and the cultures and the traditions. And like, it adds so much, even at this early stage, it adds so much to the story. And like, it's just really cool to see something like that. Like, it kind of, it's one of those moments where it's like, yeah, this is why I read manga, because like, manga artists do this kind of thing. Like, they write stories about things that stories aren't normally written about. They, you know, delve into cultures that aren't normally delved into in kind of, you know, popular entertainment. And it's really cool to see. Like, I would happily read a version of this series that didn't have the whole hunt for gold, that was that was just like Usurper and some other characters just kind of goofing around and eating and just exploring the forest. Like, it probably wouldn't work, but like, I could totally see myself enjoying a show that just, or a series that just had kind of the actual plot cut out and just like, hey, we're just gonna eat squirrel brains this week.
Well, I even have a note here in somewhere in my notes saying, hey, this went all delicious and dungeon suddenly, which, you know, it kind of does. But it's like I said, I agree with you. Like, it would be nice. I feel like I learned a lot. Like, it was like really effortlessly educational, where I'm like, man, there's a lot of research gone into this and it's telling me a lot of stuff, but it's really fascinating as a result, because it's like, man, this is all really cool. And like, all of it feels like, some of it you do feel, you can sometimes feel the shoehorniness of it somewhat, of like, okay, I needed a lot of research and you want to put this fact in, but it's no, I would say it's no worse. In fact, it's a lot better than like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure basically being the like aftermath of of Araki's travel log of like, hey, I like Italy, let me tell you about it. Oh no. So yeah, it's, but yeah, also I say like the main thing about this that I really enjoy is just the sheer sort of off the gridness of it. Like, you know, it's, you know, you've got characters who are off the grid, they're outcasts in some different ways, the plot itself is completely unhinged, they're at the end of civilization, such as you could call it at this time. And it's all crazy unhinged. Like, the end of the first volume has a new character introduced where you basically look at it. It's a full page spread of this character's like profile. And you're like, oh God, this guy's going to be a nightmare. Like, you can just see him. You can see this new character is introduced and you're like, well, like, maybe he'll be a good guy. Who knows? But Jesus, this guy's going to be intense.
Yeah, so. I think it's a great thing, actually, like, throughout this series about the character design. Because, yeah, you can take one look at a character like, oh, this guy's probably going to have some kind of crazy thing going on. And, you know, you can basically kind of get a handle on them just from, like you say, just a single shot or a single panel. Just from the character designs, and like there's a lot to be said for that in terms of like the immediacy of it.
Yeah, and like I said before, like the art is really lovely in it. It's really beautiful. It's really great. Like I say, especially like when, you know, you've got pictures of nature, like trees cracking as their sap freezes within them, which is fucked up. Frankly, that's messed up. Like, well, that's not a cool place to be. And loads of cool stuff besides, like clothing, you know, characters getting wounded. The action is really fun to watch. It's really smart. A lot of the fight scenes are not so much fight scenes as, oh shit, we lost initiative on this conflict. How the fuck do we not get shot in the head? It's really good in the, like, it's like, whoever shoots first probably wins in this case. Shit. So it's really good fun as a result.
Yeah, it does a lot of good kind of like high stakes stuff just sort of in microcosm like that as well. And I mean, I guess the other thing kind of generally around the story and the way it all pans out is, guess I was thinking about it kind of particularly off the back of Akka, which we talked about on our last kind of regular episode, like how much that series struggles with its sort of setting up its world and its characters and their motivations. And like, this series does it so effortlessly and so naturally. Yeah. Just in terms of, you know, the way it sets things out, like, you know, the start of Sugimoto's journey kind of all just feels like a natural, like, oh, you know, he's bumped into somebody, he's heard this information he's never heard before. Then when he meets a Sherpa, she's like, oh yeah, like I know part of this story because, like, you know, my tribe, my people were involved with part of that, but I didn't know some of the other elements of it. And it all kind of meshes together really nicely. And like every step of the way, it just feels like you're being taken on kind of a very natural journey. Like, even with like Sugimoto's backstory and kind of why he's going on this kind of incredibly dangerous journey to get this gold, like it's brought to like pretty early on as like, hey, here are some kind of snatches of backstory to explain like what his motivation is. And it's all just done really quickly, cleanly, effortlessly, and it just kind of adds to the stakes and to the interest level in those characters in a way that's, you know, really, really useful.
Yeah, plus like in the case of Sugimoto's backstory, like you get that in several chunks, and like you get it told from his mouth to someone else. You get like the crazy PTSD flashback, which kind of fucked me up, frankly, like when that bit happens, when he's talking to, what's his face, Toriji, I think?
Yeah.
But yeah, Jesus. And then you get the actual like basically 5-page potted history, and it's, you know, and the whole thing makes sense. Like, it's like, oh, this explains your burden. Like, you know, the characters' burdens and motivations came before even they turned up on the scene, which is very powerful and important for this, and setting up why these characters are doing this frankly suicidal, insane garbage to try and find a fucking hoard of gold, like, let alone the gold, you know, you're trying to survive against all the forces arrayed against them or that are out there floating in the air. Like, you know, Serpa has her like motivations, and it all kind of, that's why it works with it. I mean, Jean, like, you mentioning Akka 13 is interesting, because I mean, Jean, like, is a problem of that, because even though he's a fascinating, he's an interesting character to hang out with, you know, as a reader, the fact that he is so mysterious and closed off makes it difficult to get a grip on, whereas Sugimoto, like, you care about him from like page four because you just don't want him to get shot in the head. And it kind of goes from there. Like, you start out caring about the characters, and frankly at this point already, right at the end of the first volume, I just kind of want the characters to not get shot or mutilated somehow. That'd be really nice. Like, maybe they don't get the gold, but please don't hurt them. It doesn't make sense. Like,
yeah. It's totally the case. And yeah, like, again, from my experience with the anime, like, that definitely becomes a thing. And it kind of, as it goes on, and I assume the manga is likewise, like, I think it plays even more on those kind of, you know, character motivations and how, you know, effectively, because this is an immediate post-war world, like, everybody has been affected by that conflict, and that again, like, is a really kind of, it's always a rich place for stories, because, you know, all these people who had normal lives have suddenly been pulled out of them and, you know, basically given guns and told to shoot other people, and like seeing the aftermath of that and the effect it has had on people and kind of, you know, the broader scope of the world is like, it's always kind of ripe for lots of really interesting stories. And I think Golden Kamuy does a really good job of that as well. Like, it does dig into that in some interesting ways that are actually kind of really quite moving later on, in terms of, you know, how characters have kind of continued to struggle with what they've seen and done during that conflict, and kind of, you know, this realization that they just want a normal life again, but they can probably never have that because everything that was normal to them has kind of been destroyed in some shape or form. And like, even in this first volume, like you say, with that kind of PTSD flashback, like, you get this very vivid reminder that, like, these were just normal people having normal lives and just kind of, you know, looking forward to just having a as normal an existence as they could. And then suddenly, you know, they ended up in this kind of hellscape that has shifted the paradigms for them in ways that can never be repaired.
Yeah, there's a really good throwaway panel. Like, it's just one panel, but like, someone goes, oh, someone finds out that Sugimoto was in the army, and he's like, oh, thanks to you, we still have like name of Ireland. And Sugimoto's like, don't fucking care. Just doesn't say anything. He just walks away. He's just like, no, not me. Like, not my deal. Like, I'm walking away from this. Fuck off. So yeah, it's real wild. So yeah, I'm probably gonna continue reading this. I can't really promise to watch the anime because time, but like, I'd love to continue reading the manga. It's worth noting, like, as mentioned at the top of the show, it's up to 16 volumes in Japan, 7 currently released in English. So it's that the number 16 is a bit high, a bit scary for me, just because of the sheer number of volumes. But already at the end of this first volume, like, it does so much with the space it has and the page length that totally worthwhile. So looking forward to this. And one thing to mention, like, as you mentioned about the extended cast of characters, like, from talking to you now about it, I'm feeling a lot more confident about the series going forward. Like, you know, if you have a diverse cast of, frankly, nutcases, like, they'll all hang together somehow, because, like, you know, it's like, it's almost like they're finding a family in this weird fucked up gold hunting life.
And I mean, the thing with it as well is, like, there are some shows that just kind of introduce kind of various kind of crazy characters just because, like, but again, because of the post-war setting and because of, you know, various other things, like, whenever new characters are introduced, even when it goes to kind of its extremes of the most insane characters that you could imagine, like, there's still something that grounds them. Like, it still feels like it can tell you a story that makes you believe, like, okay, I can see how they ended up in this situation. Mm. And it can make you believe why they're kind of like in the place they are, doing the things that they are at that point. Because, you know, sometimes I'm all for a bit of kind of zany weirdness in anime or manga or whatever, but sometimes, like, it can just feel like it's just there for the sake of it. And Golden Kamuy, it has some real dumb, daft, stupid moments that it kind of really revels in and relishes. But the kind of the characters and the settings and the scenarios still fit within that world, and it still feels like it all exists for a reason. And that's kind of, you know, what has kept me going and kept me enjoying it into, like, you know, the second season of the anime. So, yeah, like, I mean, from what I've seen, it feels like, you know, that it's a pretty good translation of that manga. So I suspect that the source material is going to be be pretty good going forward, judging by that. The only thing I wish I knew is actually how far the anime goes into the manga, because given that there's 16 volumes, like, I don't know. Like, the anime leaves off at a really kind of pivotal place where, like, a major question has been answered, but there's clearly a lot more still to do. So I'm not actually sure. I'd be curious if anybody has been kind of keeping close tabs on it, exactly how far through that adaptation goes into the manga. Because again, it's one of those ones where, like, I kind of like to read more of this, but at the same time, you know, I it is just retreading ground for me. But if there's a lot after where the anime leaves off, then I might be tempted, just so that I can kind of, you know, get more of this story into my head.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, for me, as this is my first exposure to it, apart from, as mentioned, Twitter screenshots, is I really enjoyed it. Like, I really especially like the art. I think that's also why people got really upset about the CG bear, because all the nature, like, drawings are completely intense in this. Like, because all the animals are, like, almost photorealistic, especially the bunch of squirrels. Like, holy shit, must have spent an entire day drawing a fucking squirrel tail. Meanwhile, the characters have, like, you know, they look like anime characters, except more human. So they're, you know, they're not like chibified, although Asirpa seems to slip into that mode sometimes. Like, I swear to God, sometimes Asirpa's, like, height seems to change, but then it's hard to tell because of her large, overwhelming clothing. But equally, I feel like she's, like, one panel away from turning into a gremlin.
I'm again curious to see how that kind of goes in later volumes, because it very much feels like a case of, like, okay, I've got this character design down, but I just don't, I haven't quite got a feel for like how tall she should be in any of these shots. Like, it feels like it's the author's still kind of like feeling around, trying to find their way in terms of exactly what works there. Because yeah, like she it does change quite a bit, it feels, in terms of height during that volume.
Yeah, I think my internal monologue has, like, chalked it up to perspective, and that's kind of it. Like, big bulky dude picks her up, of course she's going to look like a tiny midget, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like, I feel like, having read this volume, I now understand why the CG bear came to be, because I can kind of imagine the animators on that show looked at the illustrations in the manga like, well, we can't animate that. Like, we can't draw this. Like, you either have a really simple bear or you get the CG team to do it, because we ain't touching that. And then the CG bear was born.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of work. But yeah, it was a really good read. I'm probably gonna pick up more of it when I next get an opportunity, because it was really fun. Like, it's very engaging. Like, I mean, I think the more I think about it, your mention of Fullmetal Alchemist, like, I've been very, very slowly rewatching the original Fullmetal Alchemist, you know, not Brotherhood, the original one, the anime adaptation, and love it dearly. And, like, your mention of, like, the comparison between the two is actually somewhat apt. Like, Fullmetal Alchemist takes place after a weird, fucked up war, like, and most of the adult characters you met are, like, scarred veterans who have been, if not party to a war crime, then have watched it happen. And you kind of realize that it's like, la 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 la, transmutation, do 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 do. Oh, these kids are traumatized. Oh, that's traumatizing. Oh, fuck. Like, it kind of escalates from there, which, you know, makes you wonder how any of them have half their brain together still.
Yeah, yeah. And then you also have these kind of weird remnants of people who are still almost effectively fighting that war in some shape or form. Like, they still have a horse in that race and a point that they want to prove. And again, like, I think Golden Kamuy moving forward does a bit of that as well. Like, there's still plenty of military involvement that is kind of, like, not directly related to any kind of war, but there is a lot of the aftermath of that conflict that still kind of, you know, rings throughout the entire military organization in terms of its politics, etc.
Yeah, it's real dangerous, especially when you have, you know, whenever a portion of a military gets its own sort of power of influence, things start to get real hairy. I've been listening to a lot of historical podcasts recently, sorry. But yeah, you get this crazy problem where it's like, oh, this sword cannot be beaten into a plowshare. Shit. What now? We broke people. Weird. Oh dear. But no, it's a really good read, really beautiful. I really, really struck by the art. I love the characters. Really interested to see where it goes from here. It's a really good fun romp. Like I say, it's like adult murder One Piece somehow.
Yeah, pretty much. But also with, like, an educational bent as well. Like, if you're,
I learned so much. It's great.
Yeah, like, if you're interested in the kind of any kind of, you know, tribe like the Ainu stuff here. Like it's kind of catnip for that, of just like, you know, seeing this completely different culture that has probably never really, you know, been exposed to you before, and to kind of see the detail of that culture and you know, everything around it, and to see it in such a kind of living, breathing environment as this story gives it is just really enjoyable. And like you say, you come out of this first one and think like, I've learned some stuff that I'll never be able to apply or do anything with, but it's really cool. Like I found out some new things today.
Well, you know, I fancy some mincemeat stew at this point, so you know. But yeah, it's really cool as a result, because like, you know, it's all the stuff it has there is where rubber meets road sort of thing. It's like, okay, we got to eat this squirrel, so gather around, children. Now you're going to learn something. Oh, dear. But no, it's really good fun. I was really glad to read it. Kind of one of these things where, like, I stayed partially away from it due to, you know, hype. And no, it was real good fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the hype is justified.
Yeah, it's very real. So thank you to our listeners for recommending it to us. Suckers.
You've done a good thing. Thank you,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. This is not a license to make us read another light novel, though. I see what some of you are doing, all right? But no, vote for what you like. You know, this is what you pay your money for. So yeah,
was this the carrot, and that means next month we get the stick?
Don't give him ideas, Andy. Knock it off. Oh, dear. But no, thank you very much for listening. Andy, is there anything else to say about it?
No, I think we've covered it in decent details.
Cool. So yeah, thank you very much, everyone. I'm not going to bother you with the full close down because you're already a patron, so you already know most of the stuff. Give us a message on a tweet at Screen Tone Club on Twitter, what you think about Golden Kamuy. It'd be nice to hear from you. Tell your friends about the podcast. Let them know they're missing out on the best content in the podcast, and they should really just, you know, throw money at us if they so wish. Jesus. God, I feel dirty. Hey, at least I'm not selling you a mattress, all right? Like every other goddamn podcast. So, from me, Elliot Page, and my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, and good night.
Bye, everyone.